Rich Lerner joins us now. It's great to see you, big man. You know, I feel like last year it was kind of easier to make sense of what the accomplishment meant, the sixth man to become a Grand Slam champion. In your mind, what's the headline of Rory going back to back?
He's massive. Now, I mean, globally massive. Just as an athlete, you know, athletes win, they pop up, they win a Super Bowl, they win an NBA title, they win a World Cup. But athletes making history in consecutive years, and I'm talking, you know, century-old kind of history, the Grand Slam, you know, this Masters repeat that, you know, goes back to Nicklaus some 60 years. But Rory is absolutely massive right now. And I think there's a case to be made that the sport of golf has two of the highest achieving athletes in the world at the moment in Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler.
Rich, I remember you telling me one time, it was after the 1999 Open, and after hours on the air and all the drama that took place at Carnoustie, that you found yourself staggering down a railroad track smoking a cigarette, and you don't smoke a cigarette, recall. What were the emotions like this year?
You know, we don't spill a lot of emotion. Although last year we did, there were hugs on the set. We reacted, I think, the way a lot of viewers did. I can't do this anymore, Rory. Thankfully, you finally got this monkey off your back with a slam. We don't have that time. I think Damon would understand that, you know, anchoring live from, is you're in the moment. You're trying not to screw it up when we get on the air. But, you know, it was thrilling nonetheless. And if you think about what Rory has done in the last year and a couple of months, I mean, it's not small. This goes back to massive. It's Pebble Beach. It's the Players in a playoff. It's the Grand Slam. It's a New York Ryder Cup. It's a repeat of the Masters. There has always been a bigness to his capacity, a bigness to his dreams. We know a bigness to his talents. And now it's all just coming together. There's a bigness quite suddenly to the expanding resume.
Rich, you love sports. You know how sports are better with rivalries, whether it's Jack and Arnie, Gary Player, later Tom Watson, Tiger and Phil for a time, VJ. Have we entered the Scotty Rory era? Is there even a third person? Is it Xander,
no.
Tommy Fleetwood, Cam Young,
no.
Or is it just these
no,
are the two men?
It's clear cut. It's these two guys. They've won four of the last five Masters. They've won, six of the last 17 major championships. These are the two dudes in the sport. And as competitively intense as Scottie is, you know he's coming hard at the PGA Championship. If Scottie can figure out how to get started better at tournaments in 2026, he may well just wipe people out. You know, he burns to do it. But there's just no doubt we are smack in the Scottie Rory era. And Rory probably has another, you know, 5 or 6 years of peak golf. Doesn't mean he can't pick the odd major off from, say, 42 to 46. He can. But right now, let's enjoy this. These are two guys at the very top of their games, clear heads you know, tremendous desire. We could be looking at two guys that end up as at a minimum inside the top 15 on the all-time greatest players list, and maybe inside the top 10. Who knows? It's suddenly not unrealistic to see Rory getting to 8, to Tom Watson. I know his goal is 9 to become the winningest international player in terms of major championships. And Scottie's at 4. And he's not yet 30 years old. He'll have a chance to complete the career Grand Slam as Rory did a year ago. Scottie can do it at Shinnecock Hills on his 30th birthday at the U.S. Open. We're talking about two potentially all-time legendary figures, and certainly these are the two best players of this era. And it comes at a good time because Tiger and Phil have moved on.
Rich, when you put all of that together, which you just laid out for us, and we were talking about it when we opened up the show today, the delicious possibilities, and again, you alluded to it. Here you have Rory that's one away from the likes of the all-time list of major championships of Sam Snead and Arnold Palmer. You mentioned Tom Watson, who has 8. Ben Hogan and Gary Player have 9. The possibilities that exist that feel within reach now for Rory McIlroy are not that far away. He will be 37 on the 4th of May. So this goes to what you're talking about with all the attributes, with all the skills and all the strengths of Rory McIlroy, not to mention the intellect. There's a lot of runway still before him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's happened with Rory is he's a made man now. He doesn't have to hit another shot for the rest of his days. And he's a legend, you know, for all times, simply for what he did a year ago in winning the Masters. And let me just flick that off. Sorry, something popped up on the screen. Rory's a made man. Does not matter what he does from this point on. So not only does he not have to win, he doesn't have to have his best stuff. And I think we saw evidence of that this past week at Augusta National. And when you don't need something, but rather you love it, that is a powerful spot from which to let your talent flow. And we know he has considerable talent. So I know we were asking the question, we were asking the question, post the slam a year ago, would he find the motivation? Well, we have our answer. And now the question might be, what if unburdened Rory becomes unstoppable Rory? The other thing I would add, he has this, just this immense talent, that probably is only matched by Scottie Scheffler. The run that he went on Friday afternoon, birdied 6 of the last 7 and the last 4 for 65, that is the stuff of the most elite athletes. That is Super Bowl Saquon. That is can't miss Steph going for 57 points. But what makes Rory so much fun to watch is his is kind of an unreliable, Arnie-esque, endearingly human brand of greatness. He can go from red hot to off the boil. But I think as time goes on, we're likely to see less of that. I'm betting that we'll see the continued mind-blowing runs and less of the mystifying mistakes, but that's all part of the Rory package. But again, because, and I know this is a theme that's been thrown out 100 times in the last few days, because he is unburdened now, sky is the limit. And as long as he stays healthy with his feet on the ground, and I think I think the lesson of the last 30 years is we never do know with our athletes, what's going on beyond the field of play. But it does appear that Rory has his feet firmly on the ground and in a good position for the next 5 years.
Rich, you are a son of Pennsylvania. Next major championship stop is Aronimink outside of Philadelphia. It is a gem and a jewel. Paint the picture. What are you looking forward to envisioning as the major championship season rolls on with clearly a lot of momentum?
I'm looking forward to getting a cheesesteak at D'Alessandro's in Roxborough. I'll probably go to a Phillies game, and we'll talk some Eagles football. We'll see what they do in the draft. It's a great golf town. I mean, I think you guys know that. You think of Philadelphia, you think of Marion, but it's much more than that. Lanark hosted a PGA championship. It was at 1958, Dal Finsterwall. Aronimink is a big, sturdy golf course. We've been there with regular PGA Tour events and playoff events in the last decade or so. Justin Rose won there. Keegan Bradley won there. But this, this screams Scottie Scheffler, Cameron Young, and obviously Rory McIlroy. And so you can't forget, the historic possibilities here. Jordan Spieth has a chance to win the career Grand Slam. And I would throw that out and say, forget it, it's Jordan. No, Jordan has 2 11th place finishes and 2 12th place finishes so far this year. He's up to 52nd in the world. I know somebody wrote an article, it's a time to quit Jordan Spieth. I'm not there yet. I can't quit Jordan Spieth. I don't think I'll ever be able to. Because he was so good, 10, 11 years ago. But I don't discount that possibility that Jordan finds it. I think he's working hard toward that goal. And if he does get a sniff, boy, the roof would come off at Aronimink. And then, you know, similarly, as I said, Scotty has a chance to do the career slam at Shinnecock. So that makes those two, you know, extra special. And then there's Rory. You know, what if Rory goes to a Rodemink and wins? You know, he'll be the second favorite behind Scheffler. Then it's all the way on. And, you know, Matt and Damon, one of Rory's goals has been to win at a traditional U.S. Open golf course. That's Shinnecock Hills. So, yeah, with this 1-2 rivalry, we think is now brewing, with Rory getting the lion's share of the love and the attention, and knowing how competitive Scotty is, I think this is shaping up to be a memorable major championship season. And we're off to a great start with what happened at the Masters. I would say, I think there's an argument to be made, and Matt, you're an historian, that this was the best back-to-back Masters the last 2 years that we've ever had. 86 and 87, hard to beat. Jack at age 46, and then Larry Mize, the local boy from Augusta, chipping in to beat Greg Norman in a playoff. 04, Phil winning, is it his time? At long last, it is. And then Tiger with you know, the most ridiculous, sublime shot maybe in Masters history in 05. Again, you know, sneaky good was Bubba with the crazy shot from the trees in 2012, followed by Adam Scott and his Shawshank moment in the rain. But I think this this made a strong case to be the best back-to-back Masters. I'd be curious what you guys think on that front.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about back-to-back, of course, you've got to start with Jack Nicklaus, and we go for a run that started with Arnold Palmer in 1958, and then it was a trade-off between Arnold Palmer, Gary Player got in for one, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer, and then yeah. Jack goes back-to-back, and he kind of established himself in the middle 1960s, and from that standpoint, he never backed down on that dominance as Arnold Palmer descended in terms of his performance in major championships. I did want to finish with one thing with you, though, Rich, because you mentioned these names already. You've been talking a lot about Scotty, but you mentioned Justin Rose, you mentioned Cameron Young. Obviously, I realize that only one player can win the event, and it was Rory McIlroy. But for many other players, and particularly those ones that you mentioned, it was a pretty good week to show how well they played and how close they got.
Yeah, I would say the winners beyond Rory would be Scottie Scheffler, just reminding us how good he is, how competitive he is, how proud he is. Colin Morikawa, a big winner, fighting through obvious back discomfort, making five birdies in a row on the second nine for a strong finish. And you know what, you can't help but think what could have been for Colin this year. And what he may lose if he doesn't get healthy, because he was on his way, based on the form he showed in winning at Pebble Beach, to having a special year. I think Max Homa, a winner. He's outside the top 100 in the world. That's a finish that he needed for his confidence. He gets a top 10. I think losers, and I say that with the greatest sensitivity here, because Justin Rose is an all-time winner, but I thought he would be gutted. I think Paulie said it on our show on Sunday night. This one will really sting for Rosie. He, though he's in great shape, he's 45 and he won't have that many more chances. And you think about possibilities for next year. Rory becoming the first to ever win three Masters in a row, and Rosie can go and eclipse Jack and become the oldest Masters champion. Sergio, an obvious loser. We did put out a statement on social media. Bob McIntyre did not have a good week on the golf course or in the court of public opinion with his behavior. And then it was not a great week, obviously, for Bryson. And on the whole, Liv, though Hatton played well, Rahm fought back after a 78 in the opening round. And that's a whole other conversation for another day.
Rich, we appreciate your time. Before we let you go, I'm going to put my hat in the ring for 96-97 as the best back-to-back, the Shakespearean play that unfolded with Sir Nick Faldo and Greg Norman, followed by the 12-shot victory, a win for the ages.
Yeah,
Tiger Woods,
and the collapse, yes, followed by the coronation. But I would say, for raw drama and historical weight, 25 and 26 is looking eye to eye with 96 and 97, Damon, and maybe has it by just a little bit. We could do an entire hour on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was
we?
Also talking, I think, the context of the same player winning back-to-back.
Oh, same player, sure. Well, we're going to ask Sir Nick Faldom. You know, maybe you know, he's going to join us in just a little bit. Rich, thanks so much for the time, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we're back after this. And time now for another Golf Today Roundtable as we welcome in a couple of deans of the Golf Beat, the co-host of the Shotgun Start, Brendan Porath, and Golf Digest contributor and author Shane Ryan. Shane, you wrote for Digest that the force of Rory is inevitable and untouchable. What did you mean by that?
I don't know, Damon. That was a day ago. You're asking me to go back a day and understand what I meant when I was just kind of off in a stream of consciousness. No, I think what I meant by that is that, so I think we kind of think of Rory, or there's a temptation to think of Rory as somebody with a volatile personality. He has these very exciting things happen on the golf course. He has a lot of exciting things happen off the golf course. But I think now that he's 20 years into his professional career, what is really remarkable is that of all the pain he suffered, of the long drought he had, of everything that's happened, it's almost like at the end of the day, it doesn't affect him that much. He keeps coming back. There's something deep inside him, beneath all the veneer, beneath the personality quirks, beneath all the excitement and the drama, that is rock solid. It's like something that cannot be touched and cannot be stopped, right? I don't think there's anything in the world, all the hate in the world, all the suffering on the golf course in the world, that could have kept this guy from what I think of almost as his destiny of being this tremendous, great, great man and a great golfer and winning these six majors. So you could call it resilience, you could call it destiny. There's a lot going on there, but there is something almost indomitable beneath all the things we know about Rory.
Hey, Brendan, you know, going off what Shane was just saying there, right, he had those four major championship wins. It looked like nothing could stop him. Then there was the fallow period for over a decade, almost 11 years, until he was able to break through again. Then he wins this Masters for a second time. I'm trying to sort it all in terms of the peaks and valleys of our emotions that follow Rory McIlroy. Is this Rory McIlroy 2.0, or is this the Rory McIlroy that had a lot of close finishes in majors during that quiet time, but broke through? So no, he's just the same guy, maybe a little older.
I think it's probably close to Act 3, not 2.0, if we're trying to dissect it that way. It's absolutely not the same guy, just a little bit older. He's a much, much smarter golfer. He's a much, much more complete golfer. And I think that's why we've seen him succeed at Augusta National now in 2026 without his A game. You can call it his B game, whatever you want to rate it. It wasn't his A game. And so he's a much smarter and more strategically inclined golfer. And we saw that throughout his final round, trying to miss in the right spots, trying to scramble back to the right spots over the weekend. He is a much more complete golfer. And he didn't have the wedge game that we saw there all weekend. That was the problem in that fallow period, right? He would hit it 330 yards and then send wedges, you know, miles long or short. He did not have the distance control from spots where he kept putting himself with his driver, and he's admitted as much. So we're seeing someone where everything has lined up. There's the experience. There's the experience of pain, the experience of loss, of close losses, of the most painful kind of losses at Pinehurst. There's the experience of success at the highest level. There's the evolution as a strategic golfer. And we've seen that at U.S. Opens, right? He's probably been the best, most consistent U.S. Open player, whether it's Brookline, LACC, Pinehurst, obviously, year over year, where you have to be a strategic golfer. And he's always had the physical powers, but now he has the physical skill with some of the wedge and iron play that wasn't there in the fallow period. So he's got everything clicking now, and it's hard to see it stopping anytime soon, even though he's getting up to be 37 years old here soon.
Brendan, I want to come back to you real quick because we all saw the images from Hollywood Golf Club of the members watching the last couple of Masters and the pints of Guinness getting lower and lower as the round went on. You've actually been there. How did that club shape Rory McIlroy?
Well, I think, you know, talking about the rock solid that Shane talked about, the rock solid person underneath, you know, look, that's a massive credit to where he comes from and his parents, who he was quick to acknowledge in his victory on Sunday night. We're all sort of pieces of our parents, right? And as a parent now, it kind of terrifies you. You hope that they don't get the worst qualities of you. But his parents are incredibly happy, optimistic. He's talked about it, hardworking people. And so he's talked about how that's kept him optimistic, even through this 10-year drought, even through some of the worst major championship losses. He enjoys being a golfer. It's not a profession. It's certainly a way for him to make a lot of money, and he has, but he actually enjoys it. And I think that's a credit to certainly where he came from and his parents absolutely being happy people, loving life, loving the life they had, even as maybe a blue-collar life and existence, helping support their son's golf pursuits. But Hollywood is a pretty unassuming place. When we visited, I stood in the pro shop, and I couldn't help but think about Arnold Palmer's Latrobe Country Club, right? It's a pretty, you know, this was after I visited, long after Palmer had gone on to make so much money as a marketer and accomplished golfer. And he kept it very unassuming as it was. He didn't pour a ton of money into it to make this ornate, grandiose place. And Hollywood is still sort of the same thing. And you know, I think that burnishes someone over time, right? It's where you come from. And that kind of allows you to enjoy the profession a little bit more, right? If you don't come from everything at the start, you can kind of enjoy what it gives you over time and keep pursuing it. And it was, I don't know if he has Rory's army like Arnie has at Augusta, but it seems like that's his, come from a house of horrors to his happy hunting ground really fast. And he's got a lot more time to kind of rally that army.
Hey, Shane, from a broad view of this Masters, how will the 2026 Masters tournament be remembered?
Well, I think Rory, of course, will be the big memory that people have. I think in the shorter term, I was really impressed with Scottie Scheffler over the weekend. I think each of the last 2 years, we've seen him get off to a slow start is a really harsh term for it because it's still a better start than most golfers, but we've seen him not be quite as incredible as we expected. Last year, I think it was a couple weeks after the Masters where he really hit his stride. I think we saw him hit his stride this weekend and just come, you know, a couple of misplays on the par fives on the back nine from potentially tying Rory McIlroy or beating him. So I think this is going to be the start of Scottie Scheffler's really great part of his season. I think he'll win another major this year. So we'll remember that, but I think, you know, ultimately it's just going to be about Rory. It's going to be, this is where he cemented his legacy. This is where we get into that debate of, it is now, I think, just on the merits of what he's accomplished as a pro, very tough to argue that he's not the best European golfer to ever live. I do think he needed one more major. I think he needed to win his sixth major before that could be, I'm not saying it's a settled discussion, but it's getting close to settled. So it'll be remembered for that. But, you know, ultimately, I think it'll just be the kind of thing where 2025 is the really memorable Masters. That's the one that, along with 2019, is the two biggest Masters of our century so far. And this will be just a footnote of, hey, isn't it incredible that after finally getting over that drought, finally crossing the finish line, then he did it again a year later.
Shane, Sergio Garcia apologized today for his behavior at the Masters tournament. Of course, he's a past champion. I think the golf world really wanted to and tried to embrace Sergio when he broke through in 2017 and won his first major championship. How did you view his behavior, his post-round press conference, and his apology?
Well, Damon, you know, as I said on Twitter yesterday, you hate to see a guy make just one mistake in his entire career and get nailed for it. It's so unfair. Now, by the way, for anybody who was wondering, that was a joke when I wrote that. Look, Sergio, things just keep happening over time. And so you always want to give a guy a break. There are certain moments when you can understand frustration, where you can understand reacting in a way that, okay, I wish he hadn't reacted that way, like Scottie Scheffler with the media on Saturday, when Jason Sobel asked him about his score and he kind of chirped back at him. Those are little moments where you go, you know, it's not my favorite thing he's ever done, but I kind of get it. You're under stress and all that. With Sergio, a lot of stuff keeps happening and it feels a little bit worse than just your normal chirping back. And here we have the latest example, which if it was taken on its own, you'd go, all right, you know, grow up a little. But in the context of everything else that's happened in his career, it's just more evidence compiling. It did not change anything I thought about Sergio Garcia. It reaffirmed almost everything I think about Sergio Garcia.
Hey, Brendan, I'm not sure if you just heard it, but Shane subtly slipped in there that Scottie's going to win another major this year. Am I correct on that, Shane?
Oh, yeah. All right. Absolutely.
So here's my question. We've had the last 2 years, we've had players winning two major championships. Might we go three consecutive years with a player winning more than one? And if so, Rory's already got it. Shane's given one to Scotty. I guess the question is, which one of the two?
I think we are certainly in an era where the absolute elite talents have been able to separate themselves, right? Even with distance, sort of condensing the skills or de-skilling the game in a lot of ways. At the majors, that hasn't always been the case, which I think can attest to some of the distinction between a major and a regular PGA Tour setup. So we are in an era where there's not a lot of quote-unquote fluky, as harsh a term that may sound, major winners. I do think Rory McIlroy is probably the best option at this point. Why? Because he's up 1-0 already. I'm taking the easy way out with that one. I think he's extremely motivated to win at Shinnecock Hills, sort of another quote-unquote cathedral of the game that he's talked about winning at before. So I'm going to take Rory, who's already up 1-0. That's not to doubt Scotty. I would not obviously be shocked if he gets one, maybe two. But there's a totally different mindset now with Rory. He talked about this is not the destination. He realized that after the slam, and that he kind of went into that grumpy phase for a couple months after winning, as he figured out how to come down from Everest after winning the Masters last year. But he is extremely motivated. I think he's looking to not run up the score, but sees the rest of his career as a way to add to the major totals, and will be hyper-focused on that and almost that alone. And I think he's extremely motivated, not just by that pursuit, but specifically by Shinnecock Hills.
Yeah, and I would add, I think that, Scottie Scheffler, my big prediction is that Scottie Scheffler kind of sort of tried to steal Rory's thunder last year. Rory gets the career slam, Scottie wins two majors, and so then we have the debate about who's the best. I think this year the big thunder stealer is Scottie gets the career slam at Shinnecock, and again, we look at that and we have to debate what was the bigger moment. So that's, crystal ball. I kind of hate the crystal ball, actually, because number one, because I'm always wrong, but number two, because I think most people are wrong. But if you're forcing me at gunpoint to play the Swami, that will be my guess.
This coming from a guy that already gave Scotty a major this year, but
I'm going to give him one as well. That's not going out on a limb. Brendan, you were doing podcasts, you were writing, you were busy. How much are you able to step away during a week like the Masters and appreciate the uniqueness of the first major of the year? Because for me, it's the week I hear from my mom and kind of golf fans that check in every once in a while and say, wow, that Rory's pretty good, or wow, those greens are really fast. Like, can you kind of step back and appreciate the uniqueness of the week that was?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously because it's the one that does not rotate, so you start to develop your own sort of traditions and rituals, both as a, not just professionally, but personally, right? And you're able to, you hear these stories from icons in our industry, people like Scott Van Pelt, people like Jim Nance, who have their own sort of personal traditions that sort of understand where their feet are, whether it's walking down the Amen Corner. I think Scott walks out to the par three course to really personally reflect. But yes, it being in the same location has enabled me to really sort of embrace the week while understanding there's a job to do and focus on the tournament and understand like sort of the privileged work that we have to cover professional golf, be it at the Masters or any other major championship or professional tournament. We've really developed a sort of routine, and it's obviously a special week. I love hanging out under the tree, connecting with people, hearing their story about families and their work pursuits. It's just a unique week for sure, and you've come to understand the privilege to be on that property while also being able to cover the tournament at large and the operation, quite frankly, with the scrutiny that's warranted and needed.
Very well said from two seasoned golf journalists who've been doing this very well for a long time. Brendan and Shane, we appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time on this Tuesday.
Michelle Wee West is the tournament host of the Mizuho Americas Open, and of course, delighted to welcome Michelle to the program. So, Michelle, why did you decide to jump back into the competitive arena?
For the U.S. Open, this is my final year of eligibility in the winners category, and it being at Riviera for the first time definitely intrigued me, and it's a golf course that's very special to my husband's side of the family, and I think my daughter is now 3 years older, and hopefully, she'll be able to retain this memory of watching me play. I'm super excited, too, and Honestly, a little nervous.
Well, you're also playing in the WTGL. You're playing Mizuho, where you're the host, U.S. Women's Open. I don't want to get a little crazy, but is this like a one or two off, or are you thinking maybe as the kids get a little older that you might dip the toe back a little bit more?
No, I think this is, you know, I don't want to keep saying it, but, you know, it's I was very happy when I stepped away from the game. I felt like it gave me a lot of opportunity to really help advance the game forward and, you know, help out in the way that, you know, was special to me. Mizuho America's Open, being a tournament host of that is extremely special to me. What we've done over the last 4 years, the last 3 years, is incredible, and I'm really proud to be a part of it, and I'm looking forward to being a player in this year's event, and hopefully that will make me a better tournament host for the future.
You admitted already, Michelle, that you're a little bit nervous. What way can you go about it to try to knock off as much competitive rust as possible before you tee it up in earnest?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to play just as much golf as I can. You know, the first tee jitters thankfully come no matter what, which I think is always like an exciting part of the game. I do enjoy feeling the first tee jitters. So just trying to play as much as I can, whether it's matches against my husband, whether it's against other golfers, just trying to get out there as much as I can. I've really been enjoying the process of getting back into it, practicing, working out, getting back into a routine. It's a different routine for sure. I have a lot more on my plate now, but it's been really fun to get back into it.
You know, you mentioned your late great father-in-law, Jerry West. Of course, he ran the PGA Tour event at Riviera for many years. Your husband grew up in Los Angeles. How would you describe your own personal connection to Los Angeles and Riviera and your excitement for being able to play in the national championship there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a golfer, taking my husband's side of the family out of it, you know, Riviera is one of those places we've never played before. You know, Olympics is going to be there in 2028. And it's just, you know, one of those great LA golf courses. It's one of my favorite golf courses ever played. And then bringing my husband back into it, actually for our wedding, we had like a pre-wedding Ryder Cup match there. So it's a really special place for us too. And obviously when you you know, think about my father-in-law and his incredible experience at Riviera. It's just when I found out it was going to be there, when I found out like the timing, you know, could work out, it felt right. I'm extremely excited that, you know, my husband's going to be on the bag and we're going to just share this moment as a family.
I'd like to circle back around for a second to the question that Damon was asking you about, you know, playing more. Is this a first soft entry back into it? And you were clear in saying, no, my life is somewhere else right now, but I'm going to do these couple of things. My question, though, is what happens if you win?
You know, that's a great dilemma, and we'll talk about it, you know, later. But it's funny, you know, it's my daughter actually yesterday was like, what? She's like, what happens if you win? Like, will you make $1,000? And, you know, I was like, yeah, it's a couple more zeros added to that. And it's just like funny. It's amazing to share this journey with her. You know, now that she's older, I think she's starting to understand a little bit. You know, it's been really fun, you know, playing with her. So yeah, for me, it's just, I'm extremely happy where I am. I'm extremely happy with the work that, you know, I've been doing off the golf course, but it's been really fun to practice and get back into it. I'm going to really enjoy these two events. I'm going to try my best not to be so nervous, but I'm going to go out there and, you know, play as hard as I can.
What does practice look like for a mom with two young children?
Yeah, I'm in it right now. I am very tired. this is what a tired mom looks like, everyone. You know, it's a lot of juggling. I thankfully have a village. I have a lot of support at home, you know, and it looks very different. You know, when I was out competing full time, you know, going out to the golf course was, you know, my work. I would spend all day there honing my craft, and then I would come home and I would sit down. Now practice is more of like a me time, really. It's my, I just have like 2 or 3 hours max to be able to go out there and practice and get it done. And when I'm home, that's, you know, when it really begins, you know, that's when, you know, I get to spend time with my kids. I have other things I need to do. So it's very hectic, but it's making me learn how to practice very efficiently. It's something that I kind of wish I had learned this a long time ago. I felt like now I really feel like I practice efficiently.
You are 36 years young. I wonder if you could talk to us about the sense of fulfillment that you get for all those things that you alluded to that take place outside the ropes, the way that you can be involved in things and still touch and change lives.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely fortunate. I really feel like being a tournament host of Mizuoka America's Open has opened up so many doors for me. It's really gotten me to get behind the scenes and really be able to shape a golf tournament. And it's amazing. The support that we have from Mizuho is amazing. They're very interested in investing in the next generation, investing in women, investing in the player experience. And we were the first event on the domestic schedule to pay for everyone's hotel room. And, you know, now you're seeing a lot of tournaments follow suit. We really have worked hard to, you know, raise the standard of what it is to be a golf tournament. And, you know, another part that excites me is the format of this event. We have 24 of the top junior girls in the field. A lot of the players that you see compete in ANWA, you know, will be here. And, you know, it's really cool. Now this being our fourth year, Yana Wilson, the inaugural junior winner, has now gained her tour card, is in the field as a pro for the second time. And, you know, that really excites me. That's like the reason, the real reason why, you know, I get so excited to be out here, be the tournament host, get to see the juniors, get to see my old friends and, you know, players on tour. I'm excited to tee it up this year and, you know, see what happens.
Well, I know it means a lot to you considering you qualified for your first LPGA Tour event at the age of 12. And speaking of golf prodigies, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about your reaction to Rory McIlroy going back-to-back at the Masters.
Yeah, man, it was he made us all go through it this week. you know, it was such amazing golf. I mean, I was there on grounds and, you know, it was a little rainy over the weekend and the wind started to pick up and it was a little bit colder weather. And it just really felt like the course was set up for some amazing golf and it did not disappoint. It felt like it was really exciting to see it. It just, at any point, you didn't know what was going to happen. And I think that's just so amazing about live sports. And I'm extremely so happy for Rory and his family and for him to, you know, do it back to back. It was really cool to watch.
Michelle, well, we wish you the very, very best in teeing it up once again and in all your endeavors. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, guys.
We are delighted to be joined now by Sir Nick himself. I guess we have to ask you, sir, how you feel and how's everything coming along?
Really good, thanks. Yeah, you know, I had surgery 8th of January, so you always count in the weeks. You know where you are, 13 and a half weeks, and you go in different stages. Every 4 weeks, you kind of move forward a bit, but bottom line, you're just going to take it very easy. And more importantly, go and get yourself checked. If I can send a message to anybody, please go and get checked. This is a silent one. You have no symptoms, but yeah, mine was my ascending aortic root. It's getting bigger, and if it goes bang, as I said, there's not even a plan A, let alone plan B. So go and get yourself checked. My message.
Wonderful advice, yeah. For our viewers, Sir Nick. It was wonderful to see you last week in Augusta, Georgia, on our Live From set. You're also one of the folks who was able to greet Rory McIlroy after his second straight Masters title, and you handed him a piece of paper. What was that exchange all about?
No, I did a quick. So the funny bit of the story is I hadn't seen Rory for a whole year, you know, since last Masters. Saw him at the Open. Of course, he's going up the fairway, and I thought that's a bit knack to be run out in the middle of the fairway. Ryder Cup, everybody was too busy. I'm doing TV, and the team was locked away. So I saw him Monday morning, which was great, on a golf cart. I said, you know, can't do this again, can't, you know, it's a whole year. And that's why when he won, I thought, I need to go and see him. I can't wait another year. And I took the, you know, the draw sheet of the day, and I just wrote congratulations from the So the cool thing was, I'm the 1989-1990, and of course, he's the 89th and 90th Masters champ. So that's all I wrote, sort of thing, for a bit of fun. But at least I got to him. So that was really good. So I don't have to. No, I'm delighted for him. I really am. You know, it's got his special. I said, you're just amazing. I mean, it really is amazing. People don't appreciate, the skill, the nerve, the touch required. And then obviously the determination, I think. You can tell in Rory when something happens, he gets a little spring in his step, and you can see almost in his jawline, it's like, okay, I've got an opportunity. Even when he wasn't leading, it was like, I'm right here, I can do this again. And obviously he did, which was pretty fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sir Nick, I wonder if people realize the depth of the relationship that you have with Rory McIlroy, going back all the way to when you knew him as one of the juniors.
Well, he played on my father's tiers, and we got a great picture when he went. Oh, there we go. Thank you. That's Lochearn in Ireland, the golf course I designed. So there's Rory at 16. So that's exactly 20 years ago. So we managed to get a photograph together on the balcony, on the front balcony last week in that green jacket. So I'm going to use that one, obviously, for Spalding series promotion. But and I also did a thing called like Team Founder, and I took Rory and a few other guys, and he wasn't the best then. We had a couple of other players. We took him to California. I know he went to Brockett Hall in England, that's the English golf course, and then we went to Ballylithin, which was great. You can stay right in the hotel, and that must have been like 2007, right before he went off and played, because we played a practice round together at Carnoustie, that 2007. And that's when I'm not taking any credit. I had an odd chat here and there with him and what have you. But that is when we teed off in pouring rain, and I thought, oh, I'm not doing this. And he's got full waterproofs on, and he made the famous follow through. And that's when I went, wow, yeah, that's good. That's different. So, I'm delighted that Hay was involved in my series. I actually got quite a few players. Danny Willett played in the series, and many, Matt Wallace, and many, many players may not have won their age groups at the time, but the series is 30 years old. So I've had a lot of tour players, boys and girls, on the ladies' side as well, played the series. So, and we're going great guns now. I mean, we have a thing called Faldo's Futures, which is 7 to 12 year olds, boys and girls, which has really exploded after COVID, of course. Mum and dad kicked the kids out the door. Golf is good, healthy, and fresh air. And we right now, with this Easter break, I think we have 4,000 competitors in Britain alone. And they come to the next semi-final, and then they come to a grand final with me at the British Masters.
That's brilliant. So that's
got my interest, to entertain the youngsters, which is fun.
Knowing Rory as long as you have, then, were there attributes, were there traits of him as a competitor, as a player, that reminded you of yourself?
Oh, I don't. No, I don't really think so. No, he's already, he managed to latch on to the era, of the whole equipment change. And I was, it was all part of their growing up. Remember when he had trouble with his driver when he first turned pro, all that sort of thing. And then, we're 20 odd years on with how the old equipment's gone. And it's a whole new, but it's actually completely different now when you think of it. My era, we were told, I was thinking about is, don't lift weights. And it was made sense when somebody couldn't lift 100 pounds. You think about golf club weighs ounces. So, and then the other one, interesting, I thought of psychology. You thank your psychology team now, don't you? I went to, it was an acting coach in 1982. And I think only like once or twice. And you had to keep it secret then. You couldn't say I spoke to a psychologist, but people go, oh, yeah. That means he's gone. It deemed it as a weakness. Now we deem it as a strength. It's completely opposite, isn't it? It's quite funny. So very different eras now, completely different.
Well, whatever era you play in, you got to somehow make it through Golden Bell. He hit the shot maybe of the entire week. He said he waited for his right wind, which is what Tom Watson told him all the way back in 2009. You also hit a wonderful shot 30 years ago on Sunday. after you were now tied for the lead with Greg Norman. What was your thought process on that Sunday, sharing the lead with the Shark and having to hit that shot to that par three?
Yes, well, that was amazing. By the time we got to that par three, we were now tied, you know, and you've heard the story. I honestly set a goal up. If I get within three after nine, I'll be good, because anything can happen. You see it work both ways. Somebody storms through or somebody stalls. And so, that was kind of, you know, you're just doing your own thing. But that was a classic, like almost like the match play world. You hit your shot first. And that was the first time I really felt my swing kind of like, felt very kind of labored. It was like, oops, we were chippy 7-iron in our day, not wedges, you know. So I just fed it in there, went very nicely, you know, 15 foot left. And of course, we know Greg fanned it in, up into the air a bit, and comes up short, takes the double. I walk off a 2-shot lead and I managed to just keep fending him off. And we both birdied 13, we both birdied 15. And then he gave me two more at 16, and that was it.
Because this past Masters was the anniversary of so many things, including that Masters over Greg Norman, I'm curious if everybody that you've bumped into for the last week plus has wanted to talk to you about that Masters in particular.
Yeah. I'll tell you one funny. No, way more than that. I'm really fortunate, obviously, but literally years. I fly around the world. I can promise you I won't go through two airports without somebody coming up and going, oh, you and Greg, 96 Masters. So they get all the facts right. Isn't that cool? And they either say, you know, I started golf, or I was watching with my dad, and, you know, and he passed, all sorts of things. I'll tell you, this last week, this is funny. So this guy is in England, and he's 20 years old, and they're watching it on TV in a pub in England. And the barman and the owner, the landlord, says, well, that's what they call it, last orders. We've got to kick you out at 10 o'clock. He says, you're joking. Nick, so I've got 6 holes to play. I can't drive home. It's 45 minutes. I'm going to miss you. You've got to let us watch. And so he says, all right. So cut a long story short, they went to another room and they all bought drinks and everything. And everybody tells me that's when I started golf. You see, this guy drank all night. And then when I won, obviously celebrated. And he said, 30 years ago, that's when I became an alcoholic.
Oh, gosh.
Grew as I sit there. Told me that story last week.
Oh, what a
story. I can't believe that's the best. That's my best story now. Well, and he went for 5 years. He was an alcoholic for 5 years. So I thought that's quite funny.
Well, I have to say, you hit the shots. Seve hit the shots. Harry Vardon won 7 majors, has a grip named after him, even though we didn't see him play.
Yeah,
is Rory McIlroy now the greatest European of all time? Do you want a dog in that hunt? What do you think?
I'll let you guys decide. No, seriously, with all his wins, you know, in America, he's won way more than I did in America, but in Europe, you know, the quality of the tournaments as well. I think he surpassed us all quite comfortably now. But, you know, the old half a dozen majors, I'm just delighted because I'm suddenly getting remembered. I'm an era before Rory, obviously. And so now suddenly people go, oh, Felder, he won 6 majors. So at least just reminding everybody what I was able to do moons ago. So I don't mind at all. Absolutely. Anytime you get reminded that you could play this game, I will take that gladly.
Well, I'll tell you what, your resume is one to envy. I tell you that. You're a World Golf Hall of Fame member, one of the best to ever do it. We appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much, and good health going forward.
All right, okay. Thank you all. I'll go and build some more drivers now.
There he is. There he goes. I bet you hits the fairway when he does. And our great colleague, the 2014 European Ryder Cup captain, Paul McGinley, joins us now. Always great to spend time with you. Luke Donald said it's over with that latest green jacket. Rory McIlroy is the greatest European golfer of all time. I know you didn't see Harry Vardon play, but you did see Sir Nick in Seve. Your thoughts, is Rory now the greatest European golfer of all time?
I think it was over last year, Damon. I think when he won the Grand Slam, I think that separated more than the extra that that Nick Faldo had, and certainly for Harry Vardon too. So for me, it was over last year when he achieved that. And now that he's matched Nick, I think even Nick Faldo admitted that last year, the Grand Slam is something special for me that moves him ahead of everybody.
Paul, was it a day off yesterday in Northern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland? What kind of word are you hearing from back home?
Well, we're in a bit of political turmoil back in Ireland at the moment with these fuel prices. So everybody seemed to be out marching, but it was. Look, I mean, I keep saying when I do interviews back home in Ireland for radio stations or whatever, that people in Ireland have got no appreciation of how big a star Rory McIlroy is, particularly here in America, and what he's achieved in the game of golf. And as much as they know he's a superstar and everything, and he's great, but they have no real understanding of how big brand Rory is around the world. You just look at what he did, and I think Chairman Ridley mentioned it in his opening speeches about Rory being so proud to take the green jacket. He had it in Ireland at the Irish Open. He had it in Australia, the Australian Open. He was in India with it. He was in Dubai with it. It was quite a tour that he had with it. And you talk about growing the game. There's nothing. Everybody knows what that iconic green jacket is about. And to take it on the road into these places around the world was something really special and something that's very rarely happened in the past.
Well, Paul, when you describe it like that, it almost comes back to remember where you came from, that humility that is Ireland in terms of understanding how dynamic and massive the brand of Rory McIlroy is globally. Doesn't that speak to the humility of Rory himself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you guys been around him just like I have over the years. And he is a very humble guy. And to be around him and to see the superstar status of everybody coming up wanting a piece of him, he's always got time. I've never seen him snap at anybody. I've never seen him in bad form or not say no to a photograph. It's about how he's embraced his superstardom. He's very, very comfortable being the superstar that he is in the game.
Paul, I want to quote the great Irish actor Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who said, "We come from a small island, but we sure do punch high above our weight." How much does Rory McIlroy, in your mind, even with all he's accomplished, embody that spirit?
Well, he's got a lot of spirit about him, Damon. You know, I mentioned it a few times on Golf Channel during the week in our live from shows. You know, he comes from a very dysfunctional background, if we can say, in terms of the war zone that Northern Ireland was. Now, even though he wasn't directly involved and he was born when peace came, still the remnants of it, and certainly his mom and dad were very much kind of growing up in that environment. It's not easy growing up when you're going down to the grocery shop and, you know that a bomb could blow up, or you're going to a golf course or a golf club, which is a legitimate target back then to be blown up. You know, you're going about your everyday business, and that's part of everyday life. So, I think people from Northern Ireland are generally very tough. They're generally very resilient. And then you throw in the talent that Rory McIlroy has been blessed with and how he's harnessed that. I think it makes a phenomenal package in terms of success. And remember, Graham McDowell and Darren Clark are very similar too in terms of where they came from. We're also major winners, but it makes for you throw in the talents, as I say, with Rory, and you know, you have an unbelievable package of not just great talent, but real resourcefulness, humility, and that he's got a bit, you know, he's stoic, you know, he's resilient, he can bounce back from things. And when you're dealing with so many things bigger in life than just hitting a golf ball, or you have dealt with, or you're a product of it, I think it makes for a very, very strong mental package. And I think that's what we're seeing now with Rory. Probably not so much now that things are going well for him, but in the 10 years when he wasn't winning major championships and the criticisms were coming his way as to why he wasn't, how he handled all of that and how he kept winning FedEx, as he kept winning DP World Championships, he kept winning big titles around the world and didn't get knocked off his stride.
Yeah, that is for certain. That package, as you just called it, these virtues that make up Rory McIlroy, be them physical, mental, perspective, humility, and more. On the 4th of May, he's going to be 37 years old. How much more time is there for Rory McIlroy? How much more do you think he can accomplish?
Well, he's talking about 10 years, isn't he? I think he mentioned that in his press conference last week, or one of his press conferences. And I would say, Matt, that absolutely that's about fair, because what he's got a game, you know, barring injuries, obviously, but he's been injured very little, actually, if you look at it throughout his career. I know he had a back issue a couple of weeks ago, but it was only minor. But if you look at what his game is, it should be a game that will age well. He's one of the biggest hitters in the game right now. And as he goes into his 40s, and Father Time will come in and will slow things down a little bit. But his game will still be one of the, you know, more powerful games. Even when he's in his 40s, he still will have that power off the tee that will match the top players, whoever that may be in the world around that time. Then you throw in where his short game is at now. And this is the best run of short game for the last 4 or 5 years that we've ever seen from Rory. He's always been a good chipper, but now he's an extraordinarily good chipper. We saw that last week where he was second around the greens. And he's always been a hit and miss putter, but now he's a consistent putter week in, week out. You look at it now, last year, outside of the great driving that he has, his best stat was not iron play. In fact, it was putting. He was top 10 in putting last year in the PGA Tour. Who would have thought that 6, 7 years ago? Even when he was winning major championships, he wasn't as good a putter as he is now. And, you know, Brad Faxon deserves a lot of credit for that, because he's brought the creativity to his putting that he already had in his long game. And when you match those together, it's apples with apples. So he's a full package in terms of me. I believe he's a better player now than he's ever been. He's got more resources than he's ever had before, and he's got a game that'll age well. So then that only leaves it up to the mental thing, and it leaves up to the stimulation, which we saw last week. He was really stimulated last week. I was a little bit concerned going in with all of the obligations that he had going in as defending champion, having to be there so early, that that was going to drain him a little bit. But I think the opposite happened. He was actually really stimulated to be on the premises, to wear the green jacket with pride, to do all the press conferences, to do all the obligations that he did. I think that kind of really energized him. And I think that's what we saw last week, was a performance that was full of energy and somebody who loved every moment of being on the property.
Paul, you've been his captain and his friend for a long time now. I was struck when you came on the live from set a couple times when I was with you, when he even had a 6-shot lead, when everybody was already handing him the green jacket, you had this glint in your eye that you weren't worried about him ultimately, but you were saying this is not done and dusted, that there will be some ebbs and flows, and that lead ultimately will tighten. I want to give you credit. How did you know?
Oh, listen, it's not hard to know. You just look at Rory. I mean, he's a very charismatic golfer. And he plays in the mold of Phil Mickelson and Arnold Palmer more than in the mold of Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, or Tiger Woods. And now those three in particular were able to suck the air out of a tournament, park the bus, as they say in soccer, in front of the goal, and just run out to a 1-0 victory. Rory's never been that guy, and he's normally better when he's coming from behind and he's chasing. And we saw that last year. Every time he lost the initiative, or when he was leading, he made mistakes. But when he was behind, that's when he went forward. And if you look at it again, that's what happened on Sunday. As much as he lost a 6-shot lead and, you know, was poor on Saturday, he comes out again Sunday and starts off okay, and then he has this double bogey in the fourth hole. But once he went behind on the fourth hole, you think about how he played the fifth, sixth, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13th hole. He did not miss a shot for that run of holes. And like I say, his best golf is generally when he's behind and he's chasing. And that's what we saw on Sunday.
So, Paul, if you're saying that Rory is a sharper competitor when he's the hunter rather than being hunted, I would add to that the intellect component. Because when he sat in that press conference, he was asked about goals and what's next. And this goes to that time frame that you roughly defined for us over the next decade with Rory McIlroy. He didn't reveal to the world press what his goals are. But the sense that I have is that he's going for those big mountains. How much do you think this is about building a legacy, and just how high do you think he can climb?
I think quite a lot of it is about building a legacy. Like I say, I think he's really the Arnold Palmer of our times. You know, he's brilliant corporately. He's brilliant with the crowd. He's really popular. He's got a very charismatic game. His life is not built around playing golf and hitting golf shots only. He's got loads of different strings to his bow as a personality. He's interested in business. He's interested in other sports. You know, and obviously he's got his family as well, too, that he's very, very close with. So there's a lot going on in Rory McIlroy's life. And he's able to take all that on board and still churn out the performance that we saw last week. And if you look at, like, most of the guys that go to defend, they get caught up in the obligations and they don't seem to come to the party with the same intensity. So I leave you with the word that I would say more than anything is stimulation for Rory at this stage. You know, he's got all the money in the world that he needs. He's won all the titles that the world has to offer at the very, very top level in golf. But for him now, it's about legacy. And a lot of legacy is when he's really stimulated. And I think the stimulation is going to be centered around the four majors and the Ryder Cup. As much as he would love to win win other tournaments. I don't think becoming number one in the world again is going to stimulate him as much, because that takes 2 years of very, very consistent play. I think that won't stimulate him as much as the four majors in the Ryder Cup will, every year and every second year for the Ryder Cup. I think that's kind of where he's at. And maybe also chasing down Seve Ballesteros he's caught him now, but Colin Montgomery in terms of winning European Automera titles. I know that is something that he's spoken a lot about, and he gives away a lot in his press conferences. If you listen, you can kind of glean in between the lines as to what the next target is, or who's got the next target on their back that he's chasing.
Well, he is stimulated, he is motivated, and he is organized as well. Paul, enjoy your time in Florida after a great week in Georgia. Thank you, buddy.
You're welcome, guys. Good luck with the show. Thank you.
Here you